Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And on this episode, we will be discussing a bit of news, reviewing Clerk, The Feast, and a lengthy discussion on Marvel's The Eternals. But our topic this week is post-credit scenes, or stingers, as they're more commonly known. Do we still need them? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Troy Heinrichs.
Hello, not hello.
Yes, Amanda Sink will not be here this week. She will be back next week for our Harry Potter celebration episode, but she won't be here this week. So how's it going, guys? Troy, you weren't here last week. What were you doing? Anything fun?
I was taking a day off, and I was spending it a little bit of paint and sip, as they call it.
Paint and sip?
Paint and sip. Drinking some wine while we painted some art.
So it was like,
oh, that's adorable.
Drunk art?
Yeah, by the time it was all finished, it kind of does look a little bit like drunk art. I started out really good with my building shapes, and then when I started the painting part didn't go so well. But I made some really good bushes and trees.
Well, that's, I'm very impressed. Did you stay inside the lines? I hope not.
I did stay inside the lines. Well,
if you're, yeah, you're pretty anal. You probably had to. Even if you're drinking, you probably are like, I'm going to need a new canvas. This is not, it's not good. Start all over.
My issue was more along the, I couldn't hold the brush like at the same level. So there's like darker spots where I pushed in farther because I was a little tipsy.
Tracer.
You know, it happens.
That sounds like fun.
You're just a tracer. No, I'm an inker. Yeah, but you're a tracer. You draw over other people's lines.
Oh, hey, John, you'll appreciate this. I was watching Netflix has a new show called Catching Killers. And killers sometimes are pretty good at what they do. You know what I mean? Like, there's a...
That's not where I thought this was going to go, no, but okay.
I was kind of watching it going, wow, I don't know how the police missed that one. And then you see them and they're like, we don't know how we missed that one. I'm like, well, there you go. This is what we're up against. Only I think the world of the 80s and the world of now is completely different. But it does kind of make you wonder how some of these serial killers even ever got caught. You know what I mean?
Through my history, or not my history, that's a different story that we don't need to get into.
Edit that out. That's where John confessed to whatever that was he confessed to.
He murdered that pizza last night, baby.
Yeah, right?
Nice
save. So through my research over the years and my exposure.
What research? God damn it. What are you owning up to here?
Right. And my exposure to true crime and a few other things, I do find, or, you know, they do talk about a lot of these guys who are serial killers or killers that are so hard to catch. Like, they get to a point where they're like, God damn it, would somebody catch me already? This is bullshit.
They start leaving notes and letters and calls.
I want people to know who I am. They have to catch me for that to happen.
I shouldn't laugh at this. I really shouldn't, but parts of it were funny because not funny in a ha-ha way, just more funny like, how does that even happen? But on the other side of that, I will say it was nice to see the toll in this series that's on Netflix. They show some of the police officers that investigated like the Green River Killer and stuff like that and the emotional toll it took on them. And that's something I don't think you see enough in true crime. Too often it's like,
no, you really don't.
It's always a cop being a little too tough, you know, and he's like, I knew I was gonna get that some bitch, you know, or whatever it was. And these people are really like crushed and hurt over the loss of these girls.
You hear stories about some of these cops who have, you know, because they've tried so hard and stressed themselves out so much over these investigations, they've had heart attacks and whatever else, and they just, you know, ate themselves poorly because they just couldn't figure out any other way to cope with what was going on. Hats off to those guys for constantly working these sorts of cases and never giving up.
On another note, hopefully a happier note, I do want to say I feel like we're coming out of the whole pandemic-y thing. At this point, I feel like the holiday season is shaping up to be an actual movie holiday season, almost. I mean,
yeah, it's like we're about to slip into an endemic here soon, so that's kind of good news.
Endemic? I hope so. I hope
better
so.
Than an enema, but sure.
Oh, that depends on who you are.
Okay, we're going to move on from that because I don't even know what the hell that meant. But it took a turn. Our show is independently funded, therefore all of our expenses are from our own pockets. You want to help support us, go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. We have bonus content for those that subscribe, Bad Movie Night. Our newest episode, King Arthur, The Legend of the Sword, is going to be on there. That's interesting conversation, so you don't want to miss that. Now let's go to our movie and TV discussion. This is kind of where we do our news roundup. The most interesting things that have happened over the course of the past week. Green light if you knew Squid Game was going to get a second season. Red light if you thought there was a chance in hell it wouldn't. Because it's like the most popular show ever on Netflix, I think.
Ever.
I can't turn a corner without some cat throwing around, "Oh, did you watch the show?"
Yeah. Troy keeps trying to mention it, and I keep telling him, stop mentioning it. He's like, Squid Game. And it's amazing to me. Okay, here's a conversation I want to have before I continue the news roundup. What do you guys feel in terms of spoilers? If somebody says, you haven't watched the series yet? No, I haven't watched it. Well, wait till you get to episode whatever. Do you or do you not consider that a spoiler? John, I'm not asking you, Troy. John, do you or do you not consider that a spoiler? And then I'll tell you where I am at.
I sort of do count that as being a spoiler. Wait till you get to episode this or that or the other. Okay, so now I'm going to be holding my breath all the way up until that episode.
Exactly.
And when the thing actually happens, I'm either going to be impressed or not impressed, or I'm going to feel vindicated or I wasted my time. That is a bit of a spoiler. Kind of parallel to that, I was having dinner with my dad and his girlfriend the other night, and he's like, "You need to order this," to his girlfriend, "because you're going to love it. It is, I promise you." And as soon as he said that, I'm like, whoa, you need to stop right there. And his girlfriend looks at me and she starts laughing, and he goes, "What?" I go, "What if you're wrong?" And he's, "Well, I'm not. She's going to love it."
All that buildup and you ruin her dinner.
Right, exactly. Like, what if you're wrong? And she's just kind of laughing. I'm like, "Dad, you need to just throw your suggestion out and then walk away. Stop trying to push it."
See, Troy? I mean, aside from story time with John Davenport, you get what we were saying. What we were saying about telling me the episode number is.
For the record, though, I did say that I didn't say you're going to enjoy it. I said I enjoyed that particular.
What's
so
the difference? Gah!
Because at least I didn't take away your enjoyment of the episode. You can still enjoy it for yourself.
Here's literally, and this is 8 years I've been dealing with this. This is literally every conversation when Troy's excited about a show. "Hey, I watched X and X. Troy, don't tell me anything. I don't want to know anything. Okay, I'm not going to say anything, but..." And then something follows that inevitably it's going to be some spoiler. And he really does try to not tell me anything detailed. I'll give him credit for that. But it's always something that I'm like, "God damn it, now I got to look out for that. I don't want to know."
So there you go. I think in the last year, he's done that to me about a couple of different things. "Oh, you need to watch Ted Lasso. It's on Apple TV. I'll never watch it." "Yeah, but no, you're going to love it. It's perfect for you." "Yeah, I'm not going to watch it." No. "But there's a guy who puts out positive energy all the time. And I know how much you like that sort of thing. And it's, I promise you're going to like..." "No, okay. Now I'm definitely not going to watch
it." Well, he's right. I'm just letting you know you would like it.
That may be true, but this goes back to Greatest Showman. You can't shove something down my throat like that.
Disagree.
Again, John, I said that I liked The Greatest Showman. I didn't say you would like it. I said I liked it.
I said you would like it, and I'm telling you, you would. Maybe not now, because now you're gonna hate watch it.
In true fashion, though, in the case of The Squid Game, I am late to the party. Like, everybody has already seen this damn thing.
Yeah,
that's true. Everyone seeing that Aaron is usually a Netflix like whore next to John, I assumed that Aaron had already seen The Squid Game, and that's why I was just
literally told you, "I just watched the first episode. Don't tell me anything. Which part of "I just watched the first episode. Don't tell me anything" gives the indication that you assume that I had already watched it.
But this is the problem with texting, right? So I said, "I just finished The Squid Game, and I'm literally in the middle of typing the next thing I'm about to say. And when I go to hit send, does his message come up?" So it's like almost simultaneous sending.
I call bullshit. So I saw your little face on the Facebook Instant Messenger. You read that shit and you still sent it.
Because it was still in the app.
I'm just saying.
The next thing I was going to say.
All right. What else is in news? I don't even care anymore. Anyway, Regina Hall will star in a sequel reboot of Midnight Run. Bad timing because I accidentally tweeted it was Regina King. It was Regina Hall. That is going to start a sequel reboot of Midnight Run with Robert De Niro producing. Linda Carter will get a bigger role in Wonder Woman 3, which coincidentally is probably the film that caused Patty Jenkins' Rogue Squadron movie to be delayed. Sorry, Star Wars fans.
I think that's okay given the second Wonder Woman movie.
Gal Gadot will play the Evil Queen in Disney's Snow White live action remake, which is perfect because who really wouldn't want to bite that apple? The Foo Fighters. They have a horror movie coming out that they filmed secretly called Studio 666, and it's going to be coming out in February. I have no idea what to expect or anything else, but I got to admit, I'm intrigued. Emilio Estevez has left the Mighty Ducks. Reports say because of the vaccine mandate, but Estevez says that's nonsense. On November 12th, Steve McQueen is back from the in the director's chair with Blitz. Channing Tatum and Tom Hardy are teaming up for a military drama focusing on three former Special Force team members who jump back into the fray alongside their Afghan counterparts to rescue families and allies left behind during the rapid fall of Afghanistan last August. Disney Plus will offer IMAX enhanced versions of 12 of their Marvel films in their service. That's kind of interesting. And lastly, Quantum Leap actor Dean Stockwell has passed away. Also, everybody keeps talking about Quantum Leap. I loved him in Beverly Hills Cop too. Just saying. Nice little mention.
Not Dune?
No. Of all of that, what really stood out to you the most and kind of caught your eye?
Disney's IMAX stuff. I think we've rewatched the Marvel movies already 100 times. So it's like, am I going to go back now and watch just to see the IMAX presentation that I already saw?
Yes, you will.
No, I don't think so. I really don't. And new stuff, if they release the new stuff in the IMAX format, I would watch it. But to go back and just watch like Iron Man again because it's going to be in, or Avengers because it's in, I don't know if that's worth the investment, to be quite honest. They could be investing in the new content instead.
Not on Disney Plus. What new content do they have?
Bazinga. That's kind of my point. Like I thought I was getting a deal by buying in for 3 years in advance, and I just feel like the content's kind of like stopped over there recently.
Yeah, they have. I swear they run one show at a time. I mean, I know there's more than that, but it sure feels like one show at a time.
It really does feel like one show at a time. In comparison, if you look at what Apple Plus has got available and how much they're trying to throw at the wall to make sure it sticks, which I'm even tempted to. I know we just talked about how I'm not going to watch Apple Plus, but there is some. There's so many things there right now where I'm like, I really need to sit down and watch that. And
especially Foundation.
And Ted Lasso.
Foundation's one of them. Invasion's the other one. Damn it.
The Morning Show for All Mankind.
No, it's the podcast one, the true crime podcast one.
Oh, Truth Be Told.
Truth Be Told. I want to sit down and watch that. Yeah.
And Ted Lasso.
And no.
Led Tasso? How about that one?
Led Tasso.
Ted Lasso?
You do remind me of Coach Beard. And see, that reference will make more sense if you watch Ted Lasso.
Is Coach Beard like some guy who is losing his memory or something?
Yes. Yep. Yes. Ah, exactly.
Makes sense.
Yep. And he has a great body. So it reminds me of you. See what I'm saying? You have to check it out.
Aw, that's so sweet. I want to talk about Dean Stockwell because I am a little brokenhearted over seeing him pass, though I understand that his life the last few years has been a little bit different. As I understand, he didn't even remember his whole working career at this point.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in pretty rough shape. But this last summer, I actually sat down and finally watched the entirety of Quantum Leap from beginning to end. And watching him play Al and, you know, how much heart that show had and how much he was a lot of the formula that made that show work, because let's face it, Scott Bakula, though good in that show, isn't good in anything else.
Wow. That is some serious Bakula shade.
Yeah, no doubt. He was good as Captain Archer in Star Trek.
That was Enterprise, right? That was Enterprise. Yeah.
I watched a couple episodes of that, and he is trying to do the most. He's trying to do something that's so Captain Kirk adjacent, and it does not work for me whatsoever. Like the overacting is there, the over enunciating is there, the way he's like that guy who repeats everything everyone says, but because he said it, it's the right thing. And I can't with that show and seeing him in that. But him as Sam, it works. But more to the point, Al, Dean Stockwell, he was great.
I just want to go on record and say Necessary Roughness was a good movie, and he was fine in it.
That's true. Necessary Roughness is a really good movie.
Okay.
It's a great movie.
So he's got one thing, and I think he's been one on NCIS, like, I don't know, New Orleans or Canada or Hawaii or wherever the hell they're at.
He got like one or two seasons out of that show.
And that show's been on for a lot longer than that. A lot longer than that.
Bakula's also really good in Chuck, but I won't tell you who he is to be accused of giving out a spoiler by Aaron.
Does anyone give a shit about Chuck anymore?
Yeah, nobody.
Chuck is a great show. Everybody should care about Chuck.
But I'm not going to watch it. I'm not.
Yvonne Stravinsky is in it.
I watched the first season and I just, okay, cool. I think I got everything I needed to get out of it. By the way, Scott Bakula, 155 episodes of NCIS New Orleans.
That a CBS show?
Of course it is.
Yes.
Yeah, it's NCIS.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. 100. Nobody's really, it's like old people in the old folks home who just feel like they need company or something, or have the TV on in CBS.
Do you know why it's America's most watched network?
Wow. Why?
Because it's literally channel 2 in like the 3 major markets. So it's the first channel on the dial.
Excuse me. Maybe people like their Mark Harmons and their Scott Bakulas and their Tom Selleck's.
I seriously think that's because it's the first channel on the dial and you can't turn the channel because they're sitting down too far away from the TV.
It's
let me get possible. Up and get my teeth first.
We're going to move on, but I do want to mention this, that Peter Jackson is selling Weta Digital's VFX tech division to Unity Software, a 3D game development platform, for $1.65 billion. This is Weta Digital. It's based in New Zealand. Obviously, they did the effects for The Lord of the Rings, Planet of the Apes, Avatar, I believe. And at some point, Unity Software, this 3D game development platform, is planning to make Weta Digital's tools available to creators through a cloud-based workflow with software as a service pricing to be announced later. So this could be an amazing deal and it could be huge. So just keep an eye on it. We don't really have time to dig into it because we don't have all the details and it's just breaking as we're putting this episode out, but worth mentioning for sure. All right, well, let's segue to the high-octane thriller Ida Red, starring Josh Hartnett, Frank Grillo, and Melissa Leo, is now streaming on Redbox. We reviewed it last week. If you want to hear more about that, please be sure to check that episode out. Crime boss Ida Red Walker turns to her son to pull off one last heist to get out of prison. But with the FBI closing in, her son must choose between family and freedom. You can stream Ida Red instantly on Redbox On Demand today. It's rated R from Paramount Pictures. And like I said, full review was on last week's episode. And just know that if you watch this movie, you will get to see the creepiest sexy dance Frank Grillo has ever put on film. And I think it's worth it just for that. So you should check it out.
That says a lot because of how much you love Frank Grillo.
I do love Frank Grillo. And we have 5 digital copies to give away of Ida Red. If it's something you are interested in, all you got to do is send us an email to contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com and you'll be entered into the contest. We'll draw 5 lucky winners. Subject line, Ida Red. Give us your name and we'll draw 5 lucky winners within a week or so of this podcast. And then we'll send you those codes. Please go check that out because Ida Red is available now on Redbox On Demand. Now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. That's right. We're doing a topic really early because we're going to talk about Eternals spoilery when we get there. And we don't want to ruin that for anybody that doesn't want to be spoiled. So we're going to talk about a post credits scene commonly referred to as stingers. They're also known as mid credit scenes. It's basically a short clip that appears after all or some of the closing credits have rolled. And sometimes a movie has seemingly ended. Now, it could be something where you get more of the movie you just watched, or it's something in the last decade where it's an indication of what might come in a movie. And the practice dates back to the 1960s spy spoof, The Silencers, from 1966, which had a post-credit scene letting the audience know that Dean Martin would return in the sequel, Murderer's Row. George A. Romero's classic zombie movie, Night of the Living Dead, 1968, is also cited as an example. While the end credits feature still images, the final shot of the film plays after the credits have rolled. And if you think back on it, a lot of famous stingers have included Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Young Sherlock Holmes, you don't find out about Moriarty until the very, very end, Airplane, with the guy who's still waiting in Stryker's cab, Fast 5, where we first learn that Letty is alive, and then they continue to abuse that trend in every film subsequently. Because everybody comes back to life, apparently.
Nick, it's like a Marvel movie, but different.
It is, very much. Nick Fury and the Avengers Initiative, of course, and shawarma. So let's talk about this. Do we need post-credit stingers anymore? Do you find them to be like a fun addition to any film or series? Do you get... What's your feeling on them? I mean, Troy, let's just have an open dialogue here. Like, what do you think about stingers?
I personally like them. I think... Thank God for aftercredits.com. Yes, that's after credits, plural.com.
Did you get a check?
That's the first thing I do. The minute the credits start to roll, I go to aftercredits.com on my phone and go, mid scene thing, end thing. Nope. Okay, great. I'm out. If it says yes, then of course I'm sitting my ass and watching it. Because I liked the extra content. I think the extra content is cool. I think the one that, if you got rid of one of them, the end credits one, you could get rid of, because that's a long time to sit there for the credits. And I know they're doing that because they want you to actually look at the credits and all the people that actually put the movie together before you decide to pirate it when you take your camera phone back and put it in your pocket after recording the movie.
Stop it.
But I like the way that they transitioned. Like, I think like the Lego movie was one where they have this like really cool stylized credits where they just run through all of the high level people with a cool song. And then there's like a little blip after that. Like those are the blips I kind of like, because it's just like one little button, kind of like a Ferris Bueller thing. But if it's the end credits, that's where I get like, I don't really need it because it's just so long to get there. But I appreciate them for being there for what it's trying to do.
I love the stinger, the end credit, whatever you want to call it. I love it for just about every single movie that I've ever seen have it done. And then, you know, it's interesting that the Marvel movies have really changed our expectations of what the stinger is supposed to do, because initially, if you think back in the days of Hooper, where you have, which is a 1978 movie with Burt Reynolds, it's, you know, the stinger or after credits thing is all about the outtakes from the stunts performed throughout the movie. You know, Meatballs is a whole, just a little prank that gets played on one of the characters. You know, all these different, you know, Animal was the first one that like come out at the end of the credits and be like, go home, you know, in the Muppet movie. You know, the thing about it is that it's one of those things, it's a great aperitif. It's a great way to just cleanse your palate, especially for a movie that you just enjoyed, that like it doesn't necessarily have to spell out that you're going to see another movie, but being, you know, you just spent an hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours with these people on the screen in front of you, laughing, crying, screaming, yelling, and then you get to the active credits and it's the whole blooper reel, like Cannonball Run style, where you see how much fun they had making something, and that really takes the movie to a whole nother level, because you're laughing with them and you're enjoying in the moments that they got to enjoy, and it just makes that movie just so much more special.
I enjoy them if they have a purpose. I've always had a problem, I think, with the post-credits stinger that actually is part of the movie. You know what I mean? Where it's actually some kind of... It's not a joke. It's actually more details. I think... Here's one of the best examples I can think of. And it's really... This one's like mid-credits. It's not too long after the movie actually ends. But you guys remember Deadpool 2, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well... After was the mid credits, you know, after the credits start rolling and then it comes back to it, you have more elements where he gets Cable's time travel device and he goes back and he basically changes history, including retconning the death of his girlfriend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I'm like, so does that mean that it's officially part of the movie? I mean, because it's after the credits have rolled, but it should be. But I do wonder how many people didn't see it. Because they might have left the theater, or they might have turned the movie off or whatever. You know what I mean? And I know that people say, well, you should know better, blah, 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 blah. I don't think that's fair. So I'm like catch-22 land in that. I don't always like when there's more actual story, or they give you a character you thought was dead and they're kind of indicating that they're still alive, but only after the credits. Most people that aren't at a Marvel or a comic book movie don't think to stay until the very end of the credits. And I don't think that's a fair add-on. I think it's, if it's like a joke, like Airplane is genius. You know, Ferris Bueller was genius, where he's just like, you guys still here? And actually Deadpool played off that pretty well in the first Deadpool. So, I mean, those are genius. But when it's actually something like that, where it's a character that might still be alive or something like that, I don't necessarily think that's fair, because that's really kind of plain cheap with the audience, in my opinion.
Yeah, it can't be part of the existing movie that you're watching.
It can't be something that really changes the movie you thought was over, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if the most recent mid-credit sequence that we'll talk about later, if that is a continuation of the same movie or if that's a setup for a new movie.
If it's what I think you, it's already been, that's already been spoiled for me. That's never mind.
Easy, John. Easy.
Yeah, spoiled for you, like, but not spoiled for everybody else.
I just caught myself.
And I also kind of get frustrated when there's spoilers for things that they're basically saying these are movies that will be coming and we never get them. Like the end of Justice League, you know, the original movie before it became 4 hours. You know, after the credits, spoiler alert, they tease the Legion of Doom, you know, with Lex Luthor and Deathstroke, and I think Harley Quinn would be on there. You know, a lot of those characters would come together and be a villains group movie. And they teased the shit out of that, and that was something I was getting excited for. Even though I don't even like Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor, I was excited about that coming together. And, you know, it never came to fruition. Not to mention Deathstroke's kind of teasing the Ben Affleck Batman solo movie that we never got. You know, so sometimes This kind of stuff, I get what they're doing. They're trying to build a bridge to connecting franchises and all that sort of thing. But it can be very disappointing if you're a fan and you get excited for something and it never happens. And you see the promise of what you might have gotten had it worked. It's kind of frustrating. I mean, look at the last Justice League. I mean, Jesus. you know, the newest version of the Justice League, all the stuff that's promised there, and we'll never get that.
I don't know. I think the internet will make that happen.
Good luck, internet. Good luck.
The fan.
I hope, man. I mean, like, the end of that movie was fantastic as far as like the everything they promised with that. So, yeah, like, I get what you're saying, though. That is frustrating because you've got somebody who, or you got a team of people who really believe in their product so much that they think that they can get away with saying, okay, this is what we have planned. And then for whatever reason, it just falls flat or falls on its face. And it's just kind of like, it bugs me. Like, I just don't understand why tribalism has to get in the way of everything.
Yep. But that kind of stuff, I would prefer, it was like Deadpool 2 and it's like in the mid credits. Now, if that whole thing with him going back in time had happened after, like at the very, very, very end, after the credits, I think I would be really irritated because I don't think that would be playing fair with the audience at all. You know, at least it's closer to the end of the movie, more to the end than it is the end. So, I mean, it's workable. I don't know. I just feel like sometimes the placement, they need to really think about the audience instead of the fan effect, which is what they're hoping for. They just want a lot of press. They want a lot of print. They want people to talk about it. They want people to get excited because they tease something and hopefully juice up their movie. That's the whole reason they do these.
But you did bring up a good point about the canon-ness of it all. Like, is it part of the movie or is it not part of the movie?
I mean, if it's there at all, it counts, right? It has to.
I think so.
Yeah, it has to. The whole thing that Marvel has done really well, though, is that they haven't necessarily, at least when it started, they were like, well, I'm here to talk to you about the Avenger Initiative. And it was a nice tease to something else, but they didn't really go into much detail as to what was coming up next. They didn't start doing that until they knew for sure that what their plan was really going to be, you know, when you started seeing more of the next movies when the end credit scenes were legit taken out of the next coming movie.
Now, do you guys like the fact that we've gotten to a point where if you go to a movie and you go to a theater, and everybody knows as soon as the credits roll, you want to leave, right? You've already been there 2 hours plus change because of previews, and you kind of just
giant soda.
You gotta pee. You freaking gotta pee, man. I mean, nobody should really hold that level of fluids for that period of time. I don't think it's healthy. That's how bladder infections start. So you want to get out of the theater, but you know there's going to be maybe something after the credits. Now, sure, you can go to aftercredits.com or go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. We don't have any of this stuff available, but we have other stuff, and I'm going to just pimp our website because Troy's pimping other people's.
I mean, you're not going to actually find out if any after credit scenes from our going to our site, no. But just go there anyways. We got a great Amazon link.
There you go. Go do your holiday shopping, please. Do that.
Fine. Let me redo the ad for you. Show notes for this episode can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com, where you can find a link to aftercredits.com, so you don't have to sit through the credits if you don't want to.
Perfect. But, you know, it's to the point where it's hard to even... Because most people don't know that. Most people don't think to go to a website and check to see if there's going to be something after the credits. So they just either wait or they leave and they miss it. And granted, I understand if it's Marvel, you should assume blah, blah, blah. But I think most of us probably do that for every movie now, especially anything that's kind of like pop culture or Blockbuster Entertainment, because now we don't know. And I do think, I don't think it's frustrating, but it's kind of a, I wish we had some indication that something was coming. I don't know how you do that. I don't know if there's like a, something you put in the upper right, like stay tuned or something, just so you know, you don't have to wait, because credits are unreasonably long. Look, I thank every single person that worked on every single movie. They do a fantastic job, each and every one of them, usually. But when it's 10 minutes before you get to the end of it, I could have peed by then.
Right. A quick thing of Tyler Durden pointing at the circle in the that's supposed to pop up in the film. Maybe that.
Ooh, they could bring back the old school cigarette burns in the film, because you don't need them anymore because it's all digital.
That's right.
You could just flash like two cigarette burns if there's two things, or one cigarette burn if there's one thing.
Well, now everybody has to know that code. I prefer Tyler Durden literally just points at the end of every movie if there's a stinger. For whatever reason, Brad Pitt just shows up at the end of your Marvel movie and you're like, Brad Pitt's going to be a superhero? No, he's just pointing. Oh, something afterwards. Got it.
Something afterwards. Yeah, he was in Deadpool 2.
There you go. Perfect. I mean, just put him in all of them. He can be the new Stan Lee, but he's the stinger police.
Right.
As long as it's not Maria Menounos, that'd be great.
Oh my God, those ads. I mean, God bless her. She's got a great career, but I'm tired of seeing her.
I don't even know how she got a career. How did that happen? Because like, she was nobody, and then she was somebody, and then you couldn't escape her.
But she's in the pre-credits. She's not in the post-credits. We're talking about the post-credits. So.
Yeah, we're talking post-credits.
Post. All right, so we're just not going to answer my question.
I don't know the answer to your question. I have no idea how she got so popular. But whatever she did it better than we did, because we aren't nearly as popular as she is.
That's true.
That's true.
Nobody likes us because nobody shares us. Nobody goes to Apple iTunes and writes great reviews about us.
Oh, pack your bags. We're going on a guilt trip. I like this. Keep going.
Yeah, now I'm just going to start guilting people into write reviews. I mean, I don't do it anymore, but that's besides the point.
Don't write the review. Just give $5 on Patreon. Patreon.
So which do you prefer? Do you prefer the kind of stingers that are actually part of the film or the ad to it? Or do you prefer more of the jokey ones like the airplane and the Ferris Bueller and Top Secret, stuff like that?
I don't have a preference.
Yeah. I mean, I like the Ferris Bueller. I like the animal and the Muppet Show. Like, I like those kind of things. I like them in Marvel because I'm expecting them. It's the when you don't expect them and then you see something that it's kind of like, oh.
I love the Cannonball Run style stinger where it's just the outtakes the entire time and you just see how much fun they're having. I love those.
Those are... Or even Austin Powers, just where you got like a joke at the end, you know?
Yeah.
I really do love those. But yeah, blooper reels, man, are a lost art.
They really are. Like, you know, or Jackie Chan used to have the stunt reels was all the times that he missed a stunt. And then they're showing you like slipping that sock over his cast to show that he's wearing shoes or something. But it's actually a cast still, you know, it's only a sock. I'm like, what the? Why is he still upright?
He's just constantly being in. It's like Jackie Chan Jackass edition. He's just constantly being injured over and over and over again. Yeah. I love those. Those are fun.
You see the couple times where he nearly died on screen.
But blooper reel, you know what's funny is like they used to have them in especially a lot of comedies. And for whatever reason, if they're really good, it just makes you laugh. But if you see them on DVDs, they're never very good. Very rarely are they very good. It's just like, it's so forced.
You know, the only time I like the DVD version of the blooper reel when it's a TV show. A TV show put one out because they have a whole, 24 episodes or whatever it is to pull, like, the reels. Where if a movie does blooper reels, sometimes it's like it's so forced and so just like, ugh. We just got to add something for DVD content and that's it.
Well, I want to mention a couple people, listeners, that dropped their thoughts and just kind of as a discussion point. Kyle Nolan. Get off my lawn. That's what he says. No, I'm just kidding. No, I hate having to sit through all the credits just to have a 15-second scene. The movies are already way too long, and add to that 20 minutes of trailers before and then the credits, and it's obnoxious. Do you guys think it's obnoxious?
No, I don't think it's obnoxious at all. I think that what it also allows you to do is, like, if you go to the movie with a bunch of friends, it allows you to have some space for dialogue so that while the credits are rolling, while you're waiting for the end, you can be talking about the movie, dissecting the movie, what parts did you like, what parts didn't you like. I think it adds to the movie experience to have to wait around for that if you go out with some people. Obviously, if you went by yourself, maybe you can run and pee really fast and come back.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, I didn't even think about that aspect of the whole, you know, you have friends there, or if you went to the movies with friends or with a small group of friends, you have that period of time during the credits to sit there and talk and be like, oh my God, did you see this? And, or, that's, you know, true. I really love watching the, huh?
That's true. That's a good point. That's true.
Yeah. It really is a good, like, or I've noticed there's a couple of times where I was walking out and just, from a movie that I went to by myself, and I saw people who were there with friends, and I'm like, oh, I wish I had friends.
Jesus. This took a turn.
I saw the joke, and I had to take it.
I feel like we just entered therapy. That's what I feel like. All right, well, moving on. These are two comments that kind of say the same, a similar thing, but different ways. So Stuart Bannerman, it's nice when we have them, but it's annoying when people expect them and then complain when there are none. And then Curtis Renwick, don't make me wait around for someone that should be in your movie. The staff need to get the theater turned around. You're wasting everyone's time. So kind of a, if you're going to have them, you know, it's nice when we have them, but it's kind of annoying when people expect them and then complain when there are none. But Curtis is kind of saying, if it should be in the movie, put it in the movie. Don't put it at the end. So there's like two comments that kind of say the same thing.
They kind of do, but I think one comment is actually focusing more on the problem with entitlement that some people feel. You know, people feel so entitled that, oh, this is such a good movie, it should have a stinger, I'm so mad. And that is kind of, we got to remember that these things are not there for, because we demand them. They're there because they either want to set something up or they want you to enjoy five more minutes of something that's pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get the entitlement thing on it because, aftercredits.com exists, so therefore it's like, I'm just gonna go look.
Do you get a check? Do you get a check? That's like the fourth time you mentioned this website. Do you, if you get a check, it's cool, dude.
Every single movie, when I go to the movie and it says the end, I pull out my phone and I go to that website and I go, anything red, okay, standing up and walking out. If it's any kind of green, that I'm sitting there and watching the credits.
What if they get
it
wrong?
It's very helpful. So
I think it's great too.
I mean, does that make me entitled because I just assume that there's going to be something and I go check the website to find out if there is? No, I'm just really picky about my time and I'm not going to sit there and try to find out if there's something or not when I have a resource that tells me if there is or not.
Dude, I wasn't knocking you. I think you're on the take. That's all I'm saying. I'm just
wondering if I'm considered entitled because I'm checking the website.
Absolutely right? Not.
Does that make me entitled?
Absolutely not.
No, you're not. That's not entitled. That's okay. But you're not. You know, the entitled part is like, are the people who are like
mad about,
man,
it.
This didn't have a freaking scene at the end of it, and I am upset. Like that's the entitled part of it. I want more movies.
Like, I can give an example. Bam, right off the top of my head, easy example. So Avengers and Endgame? I think it was Endgame. I can't remember if it was Infinity War or Endgame, but I'm pretty sure it was Endgame. And got to the ending, stayed to the credits like you always do. And yes, I could have checked and I didn't because we were having a good time just talking about the movie and we just had a great experience. And there's nothing at the end, right, of Endgame. At least in my theater. Did you guys get something that I didn't get?
Okay. I got nothing.
Just clarify. And there were some people that were mad about it. They were mad that there isn't anything after Endgame. I'm like, well, it kind of ended. I mean, I didn't think there would be, but it's Marvel, so I just...
They're not trying to hide it from you. It is the end game. It's right there in the title.
It's in the title. Yeah, it's there. So, I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, that is very much an entitlement thing. Like, Trey, what you're talking about is definitely not in... That's not entitlement to just value your own time.
Right. That's not. I mean, I would actually check at the beginning of the movie while Maria Menounos is doing her bullshit on the screen while you're waiting for anything to come up. That's when you should check, not the end of the movie. At least that way you can plan the rest of your night out while you're watching the movie.
You know what's sad about that is I never think to do it until the movie's over.
Maybe it's because you're like, oh man, that was great. Do I have to stick around for more or am I going to go?
Well, I mean, technically at the end of Endgame, there was something at the end of the credits originally.
What?
So now we're playing on technically?
There was a metal on metal clanging sound at the very end of the movie.
Okay. Well, they were mad there wasn't a scene. There wasn't like some lead into the next thing.
So then the question is, did the woke culture then scream loud enough? And that's why they put the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer at the end of the movie after the 2 weeks run that it had.
You son of a bitch. We don't use the woke culture mob. on this show. I don't want any part of any of that.
I'm not even going to repeat the word, because if you say it three times in one one podcast, they will show up at your front door. So stop it. Fucking Beetlejuice the shit out of this stuff, man.
First they ask about your vaccination status.
Related.
It's too funny. Oh, God. It's tough being a Packer fan these days. So.
Sure is.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, just don't expect it. I mean, it's just a nice surprise. And yes, use a website. I don't always use that one. I just kind of Google X movie after credits. But apparently Troy has a side hustle with aftercredits.com. Is that the website? I want to make sure I got that right.
Yes. Okay. Aftercredits.com. Because it's literally like, I want to see what's after the credits. It's, I mean, it's brilliant.
First, what you do is you go to Apple Podcasts, you leave a review, then you go to thehollywoodoutsider.com, where then you can follow the link to aftercredits.com.
Even better. See, Troy.
And to Patreon to leave $5 in the hat.
There you
and
go.
And then to Patreon to leave $5. There we go. Now we got all the bases covered, and we have hoarded ourselves out enough.
Thank God. Thank you. Thank both of you. And I think, is there anything more on stingers to talk about?
Other than on bees, but we don't have to go there because Aaron will run away.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Who brought dad jokes into this? Who brought the dad joke police? Stop it. In terms of post-credit scenes, is there anything more that you think should be discussed about that?
No.
I think we're good.
I like them. They're fun.
I'm in.
It's a 3-to-1 ratio on our listeners prefer stingers to don't want them anymore.
And for the record, like the movies that have been in the theater as of late, like I'm thinking like The Last Duel, Last Night in Soho, Reminiscence, a lot of these movies, none of them had stingers. So I think Eternals has been like the first one that's had a stinger in quite a while.
I bet you we're going to get a lot more.
Yeah. I also think that there's a lot of people have a conception of what stingers are these days. Thanks to Marvel. They completely forgot the idea of the blooper reel or the joke reel or something to that effect, the stunt reel at the end of a movie, which has the same effect as what we're talking about is.
See, that's what I prefer more. I prefer like something that's running while the credits are rolling down the side. Like show me the blooper reels as the credits are rolling down the side so that I can like sit and watch at the same time.
Because the end result, the goal, is the same thing that we've been doing for many, many years on the Hollywood Outsider. Like we'll do outtakes. We don't do them as often as we used to because you know, it used to be we kind of just had to have them on every episode, and sometimes they're not very funny. So if you don't have them, if they're not really that funny, so now you only use them when they're funny. But we have them because it's great to end an episode on a high note. It's great to end a movie on a high note because you walk out of there and you're telling all your friends about that scene, maybe more than the movie you just watched. Maybe the podcast sucked, but the outtakes were great. So then you would recommend it to your friend. Ah, the outtakes were hilarious. You got to listen to this. Da, da, da. It's the same concept. It's just leave your audience on a high. Leave them feeling good and smiling or having something to talk about because that's what we're trying to do as not us, them, as entertainers.
If there's a review on Internals coming up later in the show that copies Aaron's exact example, it wasn't because I thought I knew Aaron's exact example in advance.
Excellent. Well, now I can't wait to get there. So let's move on. What's coming up soon? And keep in mind that we're not going to have a regular episode next week. It's going to be a Harry Potter celebration. The only thing we might have before Thanksgiving is maybe Ghostbusters Afterlife. That's if Troy and I have time to do it because John and Amanda are both out of pocket.
Well, now that you mentioned it, we'll just go there first and then we'll come back around because Ghostbusters Afterlife is coming. What? So excited.
I am too.
When a single mother and her two children move to a new town, they soon discover that they have a connection to the original Ghostbusters and their grandfather's secret legacy. Stars Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, Paul Rudd, and McKenna Grace, and written and directed by Jason Reitman, who, yes, is related to Ivan Reitman, and you may see some other familiar faces as well. I am super excited for this film.
I like the father-son connection with directors, too.
Yeah, me too.
It's really cool.
I like the story that he, you know, they've been trying to get Jason Reitman to write this story for years, and he kept on pushing them off and pushing them off and pushing them off. And finally he was like, when he finally came to what the story should be, that's the movie we're getting.
Excellent.
It's the movie we should have gotten. It's the movie everybody wanted. And I'm super excited for it.
Hey, I like the female Ghostbusters. Sorry. I'm not going to apologize.
I like it
too.
I like it. But this is the one we should have gotten.
No, I wasn't using it. I mean, let's make sure that Troy is the one using it as a dig against the female Ghostbusters movie. I was just talking about a sequel to the Ghostbusters movies that we know and love. So that's all I was saying.
Like the other one was like Ghost Hustlers, maybe, but not Ghostbusters.
What is happening? Go to the next movie, Troy. Jesus.
Belfast coming to theaters on November 12th. From Focus Pictures, You Never Forget Where You Grow Up, and this new monochrome presentation of a love story to Kenneth Branagh's home of Belfast showcases a coming-of-age story in late 60s Northern Ireland and the struggles between the Protestants and the Catholics. Stars Jamie Dornan and Judi Dench, and introduces us to Jude Hill, who looks adorable in the trailer.
I do want to see that. Kenneth Branagh is one of my favorite directors. So,
also coming to theaters and Paramount Plus on November 12th is Clifford the Big Red Dog. Middle schooler Emily Elizabeth, played by Darby Camp, meets a magical animal rescuer that's played by John Cleese, who gifts her a little red puppy. However, she never anticipated waking up to find it turn into a giant 10-foot hound in her small New York City apartment. Of course, this is based on the beloved book character. This latest version is directed by Walt Becker, who also did live-action animation with Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Alvin, Simon, Theodore,
I really like this idea. It's like my two favorite things smashed into one thing. It's like kaijus and puppies.
Clifford the kaiju.
All right. On November 12th on Netflix, we have Red Notice. An Interpol agent tracks the world's most wanted art thief. This is written and directed by Rossen Miller Thurber and stars Dwayne the Rock Johnson, Ryan the Jokester Reynolds, and just Gal Gadot. She doesn't get a the because she doesn't need it because she's so Gal Gadot. Then we have King Richard in theaters. A look at how tennis superstars Venus and Serena Williams became who they are after the coaching from their father, Richard Williams. This is directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green. This is written by Zach Balvin. This stars Will Smith and John Barenthal. And there's a young lady in there whose name I am going to destroy. It's Anjanae Ellis.
And it's also on HBO Max as well.
On HBO Max, right.
Coming to VOD on November 19th, an affluent family gathers at their lavish home for the feast in the Welsh mountains for a dinner party where a mysterious young woman arrives to be the waitress for the evening and find their beliefs and values challenged as her quiet yet disturbing presence begins to unravel their lives slowly. Starring Annis Elway, Lisa Pelfrey, and directed by Lee Haven Jones.
And then we'll have the review for it here shortly.
And then finally, we have Zeros and Ones. It's going to be on VOD and in theaters November 19th. An American soldier stationed in Rome with the Vatican blown up embarks on a hero's journey to uncover and defend against an unknown enemy threatening the entire world. This is written and directed by Abel Ferrara and stars Ethan Hawke, Valerio Mastrodea, and Christina Shiraki. Yep, I heard it both ways.
I've heard it all ways. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I will have a review of that one in writing at thehollywoodoutsider.com the week that releases. I have already seen it, but unfortunately I'm embargoed, so I can't tell you anything about it. So I'm going to tell these guys, but not you, through video, which you can't hear.
Whisper it.
I'm just going to tell you what I think of the movie. There you go. They know. You don't. It's a secret. But you'll find out the week it comes out. Any recent film or TV recommendations not previously discussed? I want to mention, since you guys have been talking for the last 15 minutes, Dexter New Blood. It felt like seeing a childhood friend you haven't seen for years. It's back on Showtime. There's just something about Dexter. I don't care what you think about the ending. It's just great to see him back. And I loved the choice they made for his inner monologue. And that's all I want to say about it because I don't want to spoil anything. But they go a different way with the inner monologue aspect. And I really, really dug that choice. And if you're wondering what Dexter's about, you've never seen it. Think You, but great. There you go. That's what Dexter's about. It's the show You, but with a character that I like, and he's a serial killer who only kills bad people, and he's trying to fight it. And you don't really need to see the original series, just have a rough idea who Dexter is, and I think you can start it. It's on Showtime right now.
You just reminded me that I can now start spending my Audible credits on Dexter books.
Bam. There you go. There you go.
There you go.
The only other thing I saw that is worth really mentioning, saw some things that are not. The Harder They Fall is on Netflix. Idris Elba, Regina King. It's a Western. It's all black actors. It's a Western on Netflix. And it's basically, you know, Idris Elba is a criminal who is released. And then the young boy that basically watched him kill his parents comes back to settle the score. You know what I mean? Like the, many years later to settle the score once he's out of jail. Jonathan Majors is Nat Love. Zazie Beetz is Mary Field. So Eddie Gathegi, Troy from The Blacklist. Eddie Gathegi's in this as Bill Pickett. It's just a fantastic cast. It's just like wonderful actors across the board. And it's fun. It's cool. It's a little long. It probably should shorten up quite a bit. But man, I just had a good time with this. It's just one of those where it's a Western. It knows what it wants to be, and it excels at what it wants to be. So I definitely recommend that one. What about you guys?
Well, thanks to these two assholes, I started watching 4 episodes today of I Know What You Did Last Summer on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I am caught up on that too. I am caught up on that too.
It is good enough to keep watching. I don't think it's anything as earth-shattering as these guys were talking about in our little Facebook Messenger chat.
Hey, but I want to jump in this and say I did not say it was amazing. I literally told you I probably would have turned it off, but my wife was addicted by that point, so I had to keep going. I agree with you.
I also
you.
Am
it's
like
ridiculous.
Seriously perplexed by the number of times that Aaron's been trying to guess who the killer is. And I'm like, how did you even think those people were the killers? Like,
I don't know.
No, I'm just so I'm so confused by his choices.
I don't know.
But think about how fun that's been. It's like as far as a whodunit is concerned, it's really doing that part very well.
The only problem that it's not doing very well is that it's very much cookie cutter in the delivery.
It's pretty ridiculous.
So I'm waiting for something new. I mean, there hasn't been anything new yet.
It's absurd. Like the things that happen and the fact that nobody is gathering evidence of any kind is mind-boggling to me. Absolutely mind-boggling to me. I mean, there are moments where I'm like, wait, there's like 3 people that have been killed and da-da-da-da, and nobody saw nothing? I mean, there was 50 people there. How did nobody see anything? I watch enough true crime to know that that just doesn't happen. Nobody's got a camera. Nobody's got a Ring doorbell. Nobody's got anything to catch this shit. But I kept watching it.
Especially after one of Aaron's most hated tropes was like...
It does, yeah.
The first episode.
It does.
Hey, like I said, man, the show will test your ability to suspend disbelief. But once you get past that, it is a very solid whodunit.
I'll be honest, John. It's a show that doesn't want me to watch it. It does everything it can it can do to make sure I don't want to watch it. But I still
if
keep
it
watching.
If it wasn't for the fact that the Amazon Prime, like, start next episode, like, literally is, like, 3 seconds long and it starts versus, like, Netflix
that's
is
true.
10, I probably would have jumped. But because it was just already started playing, I was like, all right, I'm going to keep going.
There's some cool kills
But, you know, there's some really cool kills in it. And I got to say, the girl who stars in it, which I'm not going to look up her name right now. I think, the only other thing I've ever seen her in was Jumanji. And she was, you know, in Jumanji, she was your atypical... you know, or your typical, you know, pretty girl in that who evolved into, at the end of the first movie, into this, like, she wants to go adventure now and she wants to do cool things and she's not that spacey, like, I want to be pretty girl. And so, but there wasn't a lot of, like, range because a lot of her acting gets done by somebody else throughout the majority of the movie. To see her take front and center in this, where she's got to play a, you know, she's got to play herself as well as some other things. And it's, I think she has a lot of positive features about her acting that I'm very interested in seeing her move forward with.
She does a good,
let's just say it that
good
way.
Good job. Madison Iceman is her name.
Yeah. I think she's pretty fantastic. She's a lot of what's keeping me watching.
There are some curious dialogue issues I have where one of the characters, I'm not going to say who, because I don't want to insult anyone in case they happen to be listening. But one of the characters they often refer to as hot, or he got hot. And I can't for the life of me understand that, because nobody I've talked to about this show thinks this character is attractive.
So right.
I don't understand that. It's just like, I understand it's in the script, but at some point you're going to have to look at him in the eye and go, you're just not, you're just okay. It's okay to be okay.
I totally agree on that. We haven't had this conversation. I know exactly who you're talking about.
You know what I'm saying, Troy?
I do. Yeah. I do.
Okay. Anything else from Troy or John?
Well, I did, like I said, finish watch the Squid Games. I loved it and loathed it at the same time. Here's my issue with Squid Game. I would have preferred to have watched it with the original Korean dialogue and read the subtitles. Because
you can
I think that the ink... I mean, if I could, I couldn't figure out how to do it on my device I was watching it on.
Yeah, you can, though.
So I had to deal with the really bad English, and the bad English dub did not match the English subtitles, which was also really frustrating because I had to do that because I was on a plane. Because like when I watched like Le Revenant, The Returned, it was presented in the original French dialogue. You didn't have an English option, and I think that the emotion and the strife would have been better seeing it in the original tongue versus having the dub, personally. So if you haven't watched Squid Game, if you can watch it in the original Korean, I would recommend watching it in the original Korean and then read the subtitles to understand.
Somebody's yelling at you right now. They're yelling at the radio. They're just going, of course you can, goddammit.
Yeah, I never understand what it is about the things being dubbed into English that make them sound so ridiculous, but... You know, because I grew up with a lot of things that were dubbed in Spanish, like from either English to Spanish or from Japanese to Spanish. Like, and it never crossed my mind once the dubbing was terrible. But you know, when I listen to it in English, it's bad.
Well, I mean, from Panama, you're talking about when you grew up in Panama.
Yeah, that's what.
But there's something about Spanish stuff, especially if it's Telemundo. You want to watch it in Spanish. I don't want to watch that dubbed. It will never come close to the emotion that comes through from natural.
The passion.
I think it's part of what it is, though, is that the openness to express yourself vocally is it makes sense in those other languages, whereas in English it sounds like overtly done.
Sure, that makes sense. I didn't like the. I listened to the dub version too, only because I was tired from work and I didn't feel like reading. So I watched the Squid Game dubbed of the one episode I watched, Troy, and wasn't a big fan of it. Wasn't a big fan of it. All right, so John, anything from you?
On HBO Max, you have the new season of Young Justice dropped, and they're about four episodes in right now, and I really love the story that they're trying to tell. And if you haven't started watching that cartoon, go watch it. It is a very cool and very well done story about characters that you only know through periphery, or you know very little or next to nothing about. And it gives them front and center and the ability of having new adventures that you haven't seen in a DC universe before. So it's very cool. It feels more like a very good like TV show versus a cartoon you're watching, and the stories are just fantastic. So season four of Young Justice.
Excellent. Okay, well, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our website is thehollywoodoutsider.com, as we talked about earlier. You can email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Please, like John said earlier, rate us and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can always find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, and at Sink Into This, Troy at Troy Heinrichs, and The Blacklist Exposed, and me on Presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. Now we're going to do an open mic night before we get to The Eternals. Troy, you get to pick anything you want to talk about, like a short form topic. So what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, okay.
Because on November 19th on Netflix, there is a new musical coming called Tick, Tick, Boom. And this will be Lin-Manuel Miranda's directorial debut. And I'm just curious if you guys think that Lin-Manuel Miranda can do no wrong, or do you think that this might be a disaster because he's better at the rhymey, whimsical musical lyrical stuff, and maybe the acting stuff is okay. You know, what are your thoughts on Lin-Manuel Miranda, and can he do the trifecta and pull this off?
Yeah, because he didn't write this one, right? Isn't that's based on the creator of Rent? I think
creator of Rent. Yeah. Andrew Garfield is the lead character in this one, and I think it's actually the book is done by the same guys that did Greatest Showman. Maybe no, they did Evan Hansen. I don't think they did this one.
I think
one.
It's Jonathan Larson, maybe. Anyway, oh, that's a good question, Lin-Manuel Miranda. He has kind of been just constant ravings about over the last few years, right? I mean,
he's like on fire constantly.
I mean, it's
nailing out of the park.
Tough, because I think In the Heights is one of the best movies of the year. I still think that. I had nothing but great moments and memories of that movie. Hamilton was a great or a pretty good musical. I still wouldn't call it a movie because it's just the musical recorded. I mean, I think he can do wrong though. I don't think he's impervious to criticism for sure. I don't have him on that pedestal. I'm more of the mindset where I'm intrigued to see what he does, because he has won me over, and especially with his creativity and his style and how he has kind of made things interesting I didn't think would be interesting to me, especially musicals. I'm really not a big musical fan, and I definitely never thought I'd be a fan of musical history, and here I am. And I probably wouldn't have even watched In the Heights if his name wasn't attached initially.
I guess that's my question. Will you watch Tick, Tick, Boom, yes, knowing that it's about Jonathan Larson and the Rent?
Sure.
Pre-Rent, because Lin-Manuel Miranda's name is attached to it.
I'm mostly interested because he's attached to it. I did watch the trailer. I do love Andrew Garfield. I think he's a really good actor. It's nothing that really blew my mind or got me too excited. I always am a little trepidatious about movies that are based on the behind the scenes of creating said product, because they're usually not as riveting as I would hope them to be. Or they borrow too much from fiction as opposed to sticking to the reality. And to me, if you're going to make something about a true story, tell the story that's true. But it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. I figure like if he's going to make his film directorial debut with this, there's got to be a story worth telling.
I'm of the mindset that, you know, one of the things that I think is kind of is an insulting thing to say about somebody is saying, oh, they can do no wrong. And ultimately, you're setting them up for failure when you do that.
True.
Do I like Lin-Manuel Miranda? Yes, I do. Do I think that he has the ability to try this out? Yeah, why not? Like, the guy has put together some pretty in-depth and intense creative properties, whether they be on stage, film, television, whatever it is. He's been involved in a lot of the production of things that people do love. So is there a good chance that he can take the director seat and something like this and be able to convey a story in which people feel close to and can understand and move forward and really make it up, you know, and really like make them sing in their own minds to their story? Sure. I often think about the episode. There's an episode from 2013 is the last season of How I Met Your Mother. And, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda's in an episode about rhyming a kid to sleep, and they do these little rhymes of these naughty stories about each character. And like, it's not even like Miranda isn't really a big part of this whole thing, but every time he's on screen, he really ups the ante as far as the creative property is concerned. So do I think he can do it? Sure. Do I think that he can fail? Sure. But I'm interested in seeing what he does.
Does that answer your question?
That was my question.
Okay.
I'm just curious.
Excellent. Well,
I saw the trailer, so I'm just excited because I like musical stuff. I'm not paying $20 to see Evan Hansen though, because I saw it was available for Rent for $20. I'd buy it for $20. But this intrigued me because I do like Rent, not the movie so much. I do like the play, the musical. And I'm interested to see what he does with this. I'm interested to see his technique.
Excellent. Well, we're going to dive into a couple of reviews and then get into Eternals, but John has not seen Eternals, so he's going to leave. Get the hell out of here.
Bye.
All right. Thanks, John. Now we're going to move into reviews. We've got two reviews before we get to Eternals. Reviews of Clerk, which arrives on video on demand November 23rd, and The Feast, which you heard Troy talk about a little earlier, which arrives on video on demand November 19th. I had reviewed both films when they premiered at South by Southwest earlier this year, and Amanda and I did that episode, so Amanda Sink is joining me for these reviews. So take a listen to those, and then we're going to come back and dive into Marvel's The Eternals. So first up, here is Clerk, followed by The Feast.
Oh, Clerk, the documentary on the career and life of filmmaker Kevin Smith.
Pot smoker Kevin Smith.
Yeah. How is Clerk? Do we get any insight into Kevin Smith as an actor? Is this following his issue, his health issue that he had, or is this just about his career?
It covers everything, really. Okay. It's covered by director Malcolm Ingram, and kudos to him because he does a wonderful job of kind of showcasing the man he is. And, you know, I've long on this podcast have gone on that I've been really disappointed in how Kevin Smith's films have gone lately because I felt like, wow, he's so talented and I don't feel like that's showcased in the movies that he's making anymore. Yoga Hosers is a prime example of that. It's hard for me because I used to worship at the ground of Kevin Smith. Like, he was a guy that I loved and I would watch his Evening with Kevin Smith videos and then his Smodcast. And it's just like, he was an entrepreneur in so many ways and also an inspiration to young wannabe filmmakers or young wannabe writers. It's something to be impressed by that Malcolm Ingram did such a strong job in terms of showcasing not only his career, like how he got into making Clerk. I mean, I think that's a pretty well-known story, but he also goes into like how that propelled him. It also talks about Mallrats and Dogma and the struggles with each movie and what happened with each, the trials of Jersey Girl, his realization that, you know, Harvey Weinstein was a horrible, horrible person who made his career. He actually gave up all of his earnings, which is, it's nice that people know that now through this documentary, if you didn't know that already.
Yeah.
He gave up his residuals because he didn't want to profit off of that man. And also how he redefined his career. I mean, how he multiplied redefining his career several times. He completely became a podcast. He became a public speaker, which wasn't something directors ever did. He segued that into being a podcaster, which turned in a huge deal for him. And also, like you were alluding to, he talks about his heart attack, and also he talks about the weed.
Okay.
The weed, which I will give him credit because he doesn't quite totally acknowledge that his movie started getting worse when he started smoking the weed. He does blame Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen got him on the weed. No surprise there for anyone who's ever seen a Seth Rogen movie. But also that he's, I think, been high every day for the last 10 years.
Wow.
At the time of this. And also talks about his heart attack, and how that changed his life and his outlook. And it's a very interesting and inspiring story about a filmmaker I think many people feel close to and feel connected to. Whether you love or loathe or whatever you feel about his movies, it's hard to not root for him because he seems like a genuinely good person who just wants to do well.
Yeah.
He just wants to live life to his fullest. Wants his daughter to succeed, wants his family to be happy, wants his career to be whatever his career ends up being. Like, he doesn't even feel like he needs to be a director anymore. He just wants to see where life takes him. And I love that. Good for him.
Yeah. That's, I think, what we all aspire to be.
Absolutely.
So what would you give Clerk?
750. I fully enjoyed it. Even if you're not a Kevin Smith fan, I think if you're a filmmaking fan, I think you should watch it.
Okay.
And you learn all about how Jersey Girl went wrong.
All right. So then we have The Feast. Over an evening, a wealthy family gathers for a sumptuous dinner with guests in their ostentatious house in the Welsh Mountains. Who wrote this? Served by a mysteriously disturbing young woman. The assembled party do not realize they are about to eat their last supper.
Wah, wah, wah.
So this is not about Jesus.
It is not, but it is
a sumptuous dinner.
Yeah, it starts as where it felt very much to me like it was going to be a haves versus the have-nots kind of thing.
Ah, okay.
Where our mysterious assistant to the meal is helping the wealthy prepare this meal, and you have two pompous sons. One's a drug addict and one is an exercise fiend, and both think they're better than everybody. A dad who doesn't care much about the lowly people of the world, a mom who used to be a lowly person but now is kind of rich, so she looks down on people, and then this mysterious visitor that is helping prepare dinner. And I thought all kinds of things watching the movie. What it ended up being was not what I thought it was going to be in terms of the plot, like the reasoning behind it. But I will say you could watch this and Gaia on the same night and have like a double feature, but I won't say why, but that'll help. That'll fill you in. It's a movie that I think is a very enjoyable thriller, a very slow burn though. It is almost lethargically paced. So if you have a problem with slow burn movies, which some people do, I know they do.
Are you talking to me? Are you talking?
I'm talking in general.
I feel like I'm in this scenario right here.
I feel like a lot of people have a hard time with the attention necessary for something like this. You might not enjoy it as much as I did. I couldn't keep my eyes away because I had to see what was going to happen. And then all kinds of crazy shit happens. So I enjoy it. It does get bloody. It's never vulgar, though. It's never vulgar. It's tactful.
And tactfully bloody.
Yeah, it goes some weird directions. I will say that. But I did enjoy it, and I gave it $6. Now we're going to move on to Eternals. Now, I do want to say we're going to talk about this with spoilers. Because most of what we want to talk about, it would be spoilery to talk about. Would you agree, Troy?
I would agree.
Okay. So if you haven't seen the film or if you're worried about spoilers, I would recommend you come back to this at a later time. Just, you know,
maybe about 5,000 years from now.
Bookend it, whatever. But just real quick to gloss over, I thought the film was just okay. I give it, if $10 full price of admission, I give it $5. But that doesn't mean that there's not good things to say. Where do you land score wise?
I was about the same.
Okay.
$5.
So we're going to get into it because there are people that love this. There's people that hated it. There's people in the middle, and I guess we're in the middle. So we're going to kind of talk about that. We just wanted to cover that because we're going to get into spoilers, and it's going to start now. So you're on your own. Okay, following the events of Avengers Endgame, an unexpected tragedy forces the Eternals, ancient aliens who have been living on Earth in secret for thousands of years, out of the shadows to reunite against mankind's most ancient enemy, the Deviants. Well, we come to find out that the Eternals were actually created by Arishem.
The Celestial.
And it's a really complicated reason, but I'll get there. And I'm kind of going to explain how some of this works, but I'm going to do that by kind of explaining the ending, because the ending is where a lot of the details came out. See, Cersei is posthumously chosen by Ajax as her successor, granting her the ability to communicate with Arishem, right? Who reveals that the mission of the Eternals was not to fight the Deviants, but to prepare Earth for the emergence. Arishem explains that for millions of years, the Celestials have been planting their seeds on populated planets for new Celestials to be born, with the Deviants sent by them to destroy the apex predators of each planet to ensure the development of life. However, that's basically like Marvel's God, I guess. However, when the Deviants evolved and began hunting the planet's native populations, the Celestials created the Eternals to cull them. Arishem explains that with the reversal of the blip, which, you know, wiped out half of Earth, half the universe. You're right. Earth has reached the necessary population for the birth of the celestial Tiamut, which will result in the Earth's destruction. So overall, Troy, like, what did you think about the movie itself, The Eternals? I mean, we talked about it's kind of five for both of us. So why do you feel like that?
The length. I mean, literally, it traversed 5,000 years in its 2 hours and 40 plus minutes of like, oh my God, like just stop with the long run times already. Because the concept of this is really cool. I love the, it's got like a tie into Thor. It's got a tie into Guardians of the Galaxy. It's got a lot of cool things where you get this whole concept of how the universe exists. And you actually, I think by the end of the movie, start to understand Thanos' point of view in a way, like who checks the gods in a certain way, I think is kind of the theme of this movie. Mm-hmm. Because if these Celestials can just do what they want and control the universe, which really from their point of view are almost, like you said earlier in the podcast, Aaron, you know, the villain has to truly believe in what they're doing. And I think the Celestials become almost the villains in this story because they're killing life to create life and keep the cycle of energy moving. But they're meddling at the same time by creating the Deviants and then creating the Eternals. The the Celestials aren't as almighty as we might think they are. And I think that's something to really think about as this movie progresses, of like, what side do you fall on? Do you fall on the side of protect the Earth and save humanity because you don't want this Tiamut to be born? Or do you fall on the side of, but if I blow up 7 billion people on the Earth, will that make way for tens of billions of people to be formed in other universes because this new Celestial will create a new sun and a new galaxy and all of this other stuff? So there's a lot of like really good philosophical thought in this movie. The problem is that it's just so damn long and so much conversation that there's not a lot of action. And then the action sequences when they happen are so drawn out that it just doesn't make it fun.
Yeah. And I mean, and I know in the comics, I've researched this, the Unimind is a huge deal. I think that just is not great visually. I just want to say, I just didn't find that to be a powerful concept. I kind of liked it as an idea. It just, I don't think it worked well in terms of execution, but I'll come back to that. I agree. I think a large part of my issue with the movie is definitely the pacing. I do think this movie needed to be tightened up. You're famous for saying most movies are 20 minutes too long. I would say this is probably 40 minutes too long. I mean, I just
easily
really feel like it was over padded. And also, which is ironic, it's overstuffed, but I also think they could have made like two movies out of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I really feel like there's a midpoint. The story jumps around through time, right? It jumps in and out of time, and it's kind of going back and forth in time and kind of showing you the Eternals as they've gone through history, which I dug. On the same token, it became more like random exposition dumps. And I think that's what kind of took me out of the movie at certain points. There's actually one section when they're explaining everything, you know, I just said about the emergence and all that stuff. And I swear it's like a 20-minute scene, or it feels like 20 minutes, and it's just nothing but exposition. And it's the villain monologue. It's the villain monologue explaining the whole damn thing so that Cersei understands it and we understand it as an audience. And I just don't think it works as a movie. It might be great in written form. It might be great in television form where you can expand that and you don't have to have it in just one 20-minute exposition dump. You can actually do it over several episodes, or you can do it over several movies even. But I think trying to cram all that in one movie made for a convoluted mess in a way, in terms of the script.
Yeah, I like that you said it could have been two movies. I think like A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place 2, like it was one story. You know, when you sit down and watch those things back to back, they really go back to back. You could have watched it as a 3-hour production versus 2-hour and 40-minute movies independently. And I think this would have done a really great job of just introducing us to who are the Eternals, what are their powers, what do they have, why are they scattered through time, what are they actually coming up? And then you could have like broken it at the part where you get the, oh, well, one of the Eternals isn't exactly all above board. Like, I think that would have been a really cool place to like cliffhanger it and then come back for the second movie to chase them down and what the actual mission was and why they weren't above board in the first place. And that's when you get a lot of that heart and that a lot of mental gymnastics around, is this the right thing? Whose side should we be on? I think that would be a great way to start a second movie, because there's so much that happens in this movie at the same time. For as exposition-y as it is, there's some cool things that happen. Like when they talk about how the Deviants actually evolved and how they gain powers and how they become more human-like throughout the course of the movie, that just feels like that wasn't gone into enough. Like there's some things there that should have been expanded upon, or even have the Deviants come to their own, you know, evolution and way of thinking and how they should be approaching the situation, because maybe they're on the side of the Eternals by the end of the movie. Maybe they're on the side of not the Eternals by the end of the movie. And I just think that it just didn't work. There was just some things that just didn't work.
See, and I would have really liked to have seen the movie that just basically brings them to the now. You know, just kind of like what you're saying. I really feel like that would have been much more interesting to me. And granted, you know, you're supposed to review a movie based on what the movie delivered, not your expectations. Well, I'm basing it on what the movie did and how I think it would have been done better is if, like you said, just give me the story through history and get them to the now. And that's where you leave with your cliffhanger, where maybe one of these players is a little off and not quite as heroic as we would like them to be. even though he's not really a villain. He's just kind of trying to see the mission out, right? But somehow they made a movie feel very overlong, and yet not enough story was flushed out. You know, it just wasn't, it was dumped. It wasn't really told. It was dumped. And I think that's my problem and where I struggle. Yeah. With it.
I mean, from the jump, right? The whole like opening sequence is like this long, very slow, painted on the screen, not even like a Star Wars scroll, which actually felt fanfaric and awesome. It was almost kind of quiet, almost no sound at all. And they're just like writing text on the screen, explaining what everybody is. And you're like, okay, there's Ereshkigal, there's Eternals, there's Deviants, there's Earth, and there's Ajak. And like when they said Ajak, like, they don't even like tell you who Ajak is until like maybe 30 minutes into the movie. So for a long time, I actually thought Icarus was Ajak because it just jumps on in and you don't even know what the hell's going on.
Yeah. I mean, I really, it's one of those things where, you know, so much has been made about the critical reviews of this film. That's the first rotten Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. And boy, you tell anybody you didn't like this movie or you just thought it was okay. And they start saying, well, it's obviously because you didn't like that the diversity in the cast, or you didn't like that there's a gay couple. I'm like, I don't care about any of that. I loved all that too. It's because the movie wasn't quote unquote good. It was just okay. It does happen where movies are just okay. And you might love it. You may be listening to this just yelling at your radio because you're like, I freaking love this movie. Good. I don't want anybody to not love a movie. If you had a great time, cool, have a great time. But to discount valid criticism just because of perceived injustice, just drives me insane. It's like, no, it's a valid criticism that this movie is overstuffed. It's not quite processed. There's a lot of exposition where there should be storytelling, not just words. And it's just a dump of dialogue explaining everything when it should be on the screen. That's a problem with the script. That's a legitimate criticism. I don't know anyone that I've talked to that didn't like the movie that had a problem. And I'm not saying there's not people, there's assholes and all over the world, but I haven't talked to anybody that didn't like the movie for those reasons. In fact, everybody I know that didn't like the movie loved it for that. They loved that. In fact, everybody I know that didn't like the movie loved the characters. I personally love every actor that's in this movie. I think it's a phenomenal cast, like one of the best casts Marvel has ever put together. And maybe that's a problem. Maybe that is the problem. There's too many characters to try to talk about, to try to explain in whatever the period of time was. And so they're just trying to dump exposition constantly. And I just think it's clunky.
Yeah, there's a difference why it's called Iron Man and Thor and Captain America. It's a singular Avenger coming together, Black Widow. It's a singular Avenger coming together to make the team. The fact that we were introduced to, what was it, like 9 different Eternals in this opening sequence.
Well, there's just like Cersei, there's Icarus, there's Thena, there's Ajak, there's Kingo, there's Sprite, there's Festos, Makari, Druig, Gilgamesh. That's,
yeah, 10. There's a lot.
Yeah, there's a basically. Lot. It's a lot of characters to try to, and every one of them wonderfully cast. So it's not an issue with the actors or the characters themselves. It's just the script that's the biggest problem.
Yeah. And what I love about it is that it very much reminded me of another movie I saw a couple of weeks ago where it was like, this is really great. It pays homage to the material that it comes from really, really well. But man, it's like watching paint dry across a sand dune desert. I mean, dude, it's like so much good in that movie, but at the same time, it's so boring that I can't sit through it. And I felt the same way here. Like, I checked my watch numerous times. I never get up and go to the bathroom in the middle of the movie. And I was just like, well, I know what's going to happen next. They're basically going to the next Eternal to find where they are in the current present day and give you a little bit of their backstory. So I'm going to go run to the movie because I don't even need to care about this person's backstory.
You mean you're going to run to the bathroom? Because it'd be weird.
I ran to the bathroom.
You ran to the movie, you wouldn't be running anywhere.
I ran to the bathroom and then I ran back in the movie and exactly what I just said happened. They basically went back in time and they showed you what happened and they came to the present day and they got everybody together and had a bunch of food because that's what they did. Every time they came to someone's house, they sat at a table and they ate some food and talked.
It's very
over
much
over and over and over again for the first hour of the movie.
Yeah. I love a conversation I had with somebody when I was talking about how I didn't love this movie. I love certain aspects of it. Like, I can't wait for the next Eternals movie. as long as we have a better script. Sincerely, yes. I love the characters. But I was talking to somebody about it, and they were just like, well, you just don't like character dramas. I'm like, then you've never listened to the podcast, because I review them constantly, and that's 90% of what I watch. Stop it. Stop making... I don't understand why people just can't accept that other people might not like what you love. It happens all the time to me. A lot because of
things you're going against, you're going up against Disney. You can't go up against Disney, and you can't go up against Marvel, and you can't go up against Feige. And
there is something to that. If I said I didn't like, I don't know, Zack Snyder's Justice League, nobody's going to be shouting me down. But I say I don't like Eternals, and I'm literally getting shouted down, and I don't like that, and it irritates me. Just like, hey, your opinion's valid too. You loved it. That's your opinion. Good on you. It's okay that I didn't. It's okay that one of their movies is just okay. And that, you know, they could have done some things different. It doesn't mean that I'm not excited about the next one, because I freaking love this cast. I can't. And let's talk about the cast for a little bit. Gemma Chan as Cersei. Love that she got a starring role. I think she's a wonderful actress who's been deserving. She's way better than anybody else in Crazy Rich Asians. So I definitely. For sure. Yeah, just 100%. Richard Madden's a guy that I've been touting for James Bond forever. I know a lot of people have. And loved him as Icarus. Angelina Jolie, I mean, her character kind of does a... I mean, anything on... I should ask, anything on Cersei and Icarus before we move on? Like, what were your thoughts on those two before we move
no,
on?
No, I thought Cersei really brought a lot of heart to the role, even when she was, like, pining for Kit Harington's character to, you know, her human side really showed. I thought she did a really great job with that. The Icarus character, which, you know, he was going to be the one that turns because he's Icarus.
I thought I'd check on you because I haven't been around in a couple of years or a couple, whatever, hundreds of years or whatever, but saw there was an earthquake and thought I'd check on you. That's when I'm like, what? Just bad writing. Yeah. That's really just bad writing.
He's checking on you because he's got an ulterior motive.
Exactly.
You might not necessarily think he's a bad guy, but you know he's got an ulterior motive, because if he loves Cersei as much as he says he does and he's been gone for thousands of years, then he's coming back because he's got an alternative motive. But no, fantastic job again. Like, I thought he was Homelander the entire time.
And I think he's a little deeper than Homelander, right? Like, he's not really evil. He just believes in the mission, and he's not gonna, it's gonna go through no matter what. It has to go through because that's what he's there for. That's literally what he's created for. So
And Angelina Jolie's character and the way they explain the problem she's having, and kind of gives you that clue about what's actually going on with the Eternals and how the cycle repeats itself over and over again. I really thought that was really great. I didn't find her like Angelina Jolie-ish at all. I thought she really, you know, played the role quite well, to be quite honest.
I don't know what that means, but, you know, I'm glad people remember that she's a pretty good actress too. I think she is. I thought she handled the mental breakdown pretty well of over the overwhelming memories. For a while, I thought, well, is Icarus doing this? Because I thought he was bad the second I saw him, so I'm just waiting for that to happen. Salma Hayek, one of my favorite actresses of all time, kind of sad that she's dead, but, you know, still.
She's probably the one I was probably the most disappointed in, because I felt like she didn't get enough to do.
I agree.
Because of the way they told the story. Because
she had a really pivotal role in everything. And I feel like, here's my, and I hate to, like, I'm seriously, there's a lot of stuff I really love about this, but this is why it gets so brought down in the score, is because I felt like every actor was acting their asses off. Like, they were being very, very emotional and really just bringing it. They brought their A game, every one of them, but I didn't feel the emotion from any of them. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Like I feel like it's just because of how the story was told. And it was just like, you spent so much time just talking, or just not talking. I love talking in movies, just dropping data, that you didn't let me get as invested as I needed to be to feel what they obviously are feeling on screen.
Right. That's exactly right. Like, there was so much heart, yet the heart wasn't showing because you had to sit and listen to 10 minutes of conversation before the heart showed up.
Yeah. I mean, I really think the best relationship to me is Gemma Chan and Kit Harington. For whatever reason, that just worked for me. I mean, it just felt very natural and very emotional, and it was, you know, Dane seems like a good guy, and I can't wait to see what happens with his character in the future. And she just, you know, you understood that she knows that he's going to die at some point and he's going to age and everything else, but she loves him. And I thought that was a really interesting relationship. I love that.
Oh, and I just really love Gilgamesh and Athena.
Yeah.
and their relationship. Like, oh my gosh, like heartbreaking, heartbreaking.
It was. As far as the other characters, Kumail Nanjiani as Kingo, I love that they open with a Bollywood musical. I thought that was it's pretty hysterical. Karoon is kind of the supporting actor winner.
The sidekick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's pretty funny. And I actually thought Kumail got to, he definitely looks ripped. I mean, you can tell he's been working out. Jesus.
For sure.
Sprite was an interesting character. Leah McHugh. I thought she was, I like how they solved the dilemma at the end. Cause I'm like, how's she going to come back? She must die at the end of this because I don't know the comics at all. And I'm like, so you're just going to, you're going to have to die because there's no way you stay young in the next movie. And they corrected that problem, making her a real boy, making her Pinocchio.
Which is funny because it was like they use in the movie the concept of Peter Pan, and Peter Pan never wants to grow up. And then they say Sprite's the Tinkerbell because she's got the crush on Icarus as well. And Icarus is the Peter Pan in the example. But then the fact that she does get to, or, you know, that Leah does get to grow up at the end of the movie, I think is a very, very telling part of the story.
And Brian Tyree Henry as Fastos. I really dug the relationship he has with his husband, boyfriend. I can't remember I'm pretty sure they were married.
They're married, yeah.
Yeah.
With the adopted kid.
Yep. And the son, you know, I like that dynamic. I thought that was great. Yeah, also he's good humor as well in terms of his role. Makari, Lauren Ridloff, I really liked that performance, and it was really interesting to have like a deaf character. Basically she's a deaf character who's the Flash, and I just thought that was a fascinating dynamic I didn't know anything about in the Marvel Universe. What did you think about her, Fastos, Druig, Barry Keoghan as Druig? He's an interesting character because he's kind of like the dick of the whole group, right? Every group has to have a dick.
Druig was going to be the one that was behind the memory switching and controllingness, because that's his power, is to literally mind control everything. And I thought that's what was happening with Thena. Was that Druig was controlling her and causing her to freak out. And then when he has this like little cult that he's like doing in the present day and trying to isolate himself from the rest of the world and trying to make the Earth that he wanted to make, I thought for sure Druig was going to be the bad guy. But yeah, I think all of them did really, really well in the roles that they were given and in the powers that they had. I thought that they really transformed their powers into their characters and did the show the way they were supposed to do the show. All of it is good. It's just, so much talking around tables.
And I don't even mind that. Like, I love conversation dynamics and real character depth. I just like, but they were talking and not in character growth, but in explaining the story. And that's not riveting. It's not riveting to explain something and then data dumps. Data dumps are not good exposition scenes. Like, that's not good character dialogue. That's not where you get a ton of your heart built in and everything. You're just dropping facts. It's just like sitting around listening to a friend Wikipedia something, you know. It's hard to get emotional about that, and that's where I just think falter. But you know, I don't want to drag on that too much. We did lose Ajak and Gilgamesh. Any of those hit you?
The Gilgamesh one was pretty tough because of, you know, he was the person that was keeping Thena put together.
Yeah.
And then when literally dies right in front of Thena, I thought that was like, oh, dude, like seriously, like, you know,
his really hit me hard.
The Ajak one, not so much, because obviously you that was telegraphed a mile away.
Yeah. And that one I want to ask you about. So we both called Icarus's turn immediately. You and I have talked about this privately, but like I said, and I'm not exaggerating, the second he showed up out of nowhere after they've already made sure to mention that he's been gone for a long period of time. And then every single time she asks him, like, he's just like, oh, I don't want to address that. So weird. Just like, you're making it so painfully obvious, but whatever. Yet the movie kind of played it as this huge revelation when it happened, right? Like, we should all be taken aback. And I want to know, did they just make a misstep in storytelling, or is it just, we're not being fair because we watch too many movies?
No, I think it was a misstep. I think it would have been better if they would have actually like shown it right out of the gate, maybe. Like, cause like,
because it was so obvious. Opening,
yeah. The whole opening sequence was, you know, this is the Eternals and these are the Celestials and these are the Deviants. And then Ajak always followed Arishem's, you know, stuff until this one mission, open movie. And I think if it would have opened it with literally, you know, Icarus pushing Ajax down into the thing and then getting killed and then getting sucked up with the juices and then the deviants morphing, like if it would have opened on that sequence, I thought that, I think that would have been great.
You just get it out of the way.
Just get out of the way.
Yep. And then play with that throughout the movie.
Yeah.
As he's
and then the movie would be about, why did Icarus do that? And then you get the reveal of, oh, he's doing it because he does believe 100% that Arishem is actually correct.
He's committed.
Where everybody else is struggling with the fact that he's not.
Yeah,
that's committed. The heart of the movie.
He's the right hand. You know, he does what he's supposed to be doing. He's doing what he's told. He's a military man, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's following the mission. That's what his job is.
Duty, corps, Eshram, country.
But I do think it kind of hurt Ajax's death, because when we see it, there was zero surprise there. I mean, it was kind of emotional because I'm a Salma Hayek fan, and I'm like, don't kill Salma Hayek, and I had to watch her die, and that just makes me sad. But the actual event wasn't as emotional as I think it could have been.
Yeah, because you already knew she was dead because they found her body.
I knew that.
You already knew that they sucked out her juices and then made that morph into the deviants, because you saw that happen in London 20 minutes into the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it was like the movie was like told in reverse. I think that was the challenge.
I just think I agree with you. There's a more linear way to do this, and I think it would have came across a little better. When you have this many characters, this much story, and you're trying to do it in one movie, I just feel like there's a better way to do it. I just do. And somebody's already just sick of listening to us because I think we're just poo-pooing on their movie I love.
Well, I think it's true. I think there's some kind of like rearranged cut. Like if you could rearrange all the pieces of this into a different linear telling, you might actually have a great movie, because a lot of this is really great. It's just told out of sequence or something. I don't know.
Just assembled, I think, the wrong way. But
yeah,
the actual overall concept. So we've already talked about what we didn't like. I think we've addressed that. Special effects, I would say we can agree, are pretty phenomenal as always for Marvel movies.
Oh my gosh. When Tiamat comes out of the water, I'm just like, wow, that's really like, wow.
That was very cool.
I saw it in IMAX and I was like, I'm impressed. It looked real. It looked normal. It looked like it fit. The volcano looked like it fit. Like none of it felt like it was CGI'd at all. It looked like it was all practical effects. It was so well done.
Did you like the whole Unimind concept?
I like the concept. I like the channeling of the energy and pushing it into Cersei at the end. How it like kicks in, because it just kind of kicks in. It's not like they do like a whole like, you know, activate interlocks, Dinotherms connected Voltron type thing where they all combine as one. It just kind of like just starts. And it's like, well, that's kind of abrupt. You know, I think that part of it's a little bit weird. Like at least maybe like hold the bracelets up in the air or something so that you like signal that you're like turning it on. Yeah, you know, I think that's part of the part that was a little bit weird. But the concept of the Unimind I thought was great. Stupid name, but
a lot of things are. So what do you think about this overall concept of Celestials and the purpose of the Eternals? I mean, that's a pretty big, bold idea, and I do not know these comics, so this is all new to me, you know, which is nice. It's actually nice to have that. I like this idea. I thought this was a really creative, interesting idea. Like I said, didn't like the execution of the storytelling, but as an overall concept, I thought it was very cool, very interesting, very intriguing, very philosophical, very thoughtful, and something to actually contemplate, which is rare for many Marvel movies. You know, usually it's like, get big bad who's got going after glowy thing.
I think that the whole concept of the Celestials and the purpose is to create the universe and create the things that they need to create. And then when you find out what happens in the first post-credit sequence midway through, when Harry Styles shows up to find out that he's actually an Eternal named Eros, and then the fact that he's actually the brother of Thanos, I thought that was like, oh, well, was Thanos an Eternal? I don't understand, because now I'm confused. And this, the concept of Thanos wanting to have the universe's population, was that because he was rebelling against the Celestials and that's what his greater purpose was? Or, I mean, there's just a lot of questions now because of this concept. Was like Thanos actually doing a good thing potentially? And it makes me kind of rethink that entire first 10 years of the universe in a whole new way.
Which is a good thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's evolving. It's getting much, much crazier, much bigger, much more of a universe situation as opposed to just Earth, which I think is a pretty interesting concept.
And then when you find out that the Eternals are actually robots, really complex robots, then I just sit there and I go, oh, well, Thanos created Nebula, and Nebula was a robot. Was it like the same schematics because he knew what his brother Eros was built out of? Like, I don't know. Like, there's just lots of new questions just out of that 15 seconds of information.
And this is the thing that I thought was pretty fascinating. The post-credit stingers were probably my favorite part of the movie.
Yep. I think I put in my thing on Facebook. I said the best part of this movie was the credits. And not because it was a bad movie, but because like the things in the credits were actually really, really cool.
It really kind of, for me, saved the movie from me just saying, yeah, I probably would never watch it again. I would watch it again now just because that kind of gives me a new way to look at the whole movie as a whole.
Right.
But I wouldn't go to a theater to see it. It'd be something where I'll wait for it to hit Disney Plus and then I'll watch it there.
Yeah. It's that first hour, 45 minutes of the meeting everybody, introducing everybody, getting to know everybody, find everybody, the jumping around in time. It just, that part of it just didn't work. Like, get to the point where you get to the point. And then now that we got at the point, now we can go do some stuff.
Now, that brings us to what's coming, right? So in terms of like the future, do you want an Eternals 2? Where everybody that's still alive is still in this movie? Or would you rather see, because this is what I'm thinking, because there's too many characters in my opinion, it was too hard to do them all real justice. I would prefer to see Eternals with three or four Eternals, and then a different Eternals with three or four characters, you know, going off on adventures or missions or whatever. And then, you know, you can bring them back all together when you do an Avengers kind of movie. But I don't think all of them should. I mean, I guess you killed two off, so that makes it a little lighter, as long as you're willing to kill somebody else off. But I would kind of like to see three or four of them together going off on their own adventure, kind of like a, not necessarily Guardians of the Galaxy, but their own story, than I would another eight characters in one movie.
Yeah, I think doing the Eternals out of the gate as an ensemble, I think, is probably what hurt the movie. Like you're saying, I think if we were introduced to like just Cersei, just Icarus, maybe just Ajax, maybe just Phastos, you know, like four, I think it would have been better. Or as the movie progresses, you know, you're introduced to more of the Eternals as they go along. Like they end up fighting a deviant somewhere and they meet somebody else and they're like, oh, you're an Eternal too. Oh, that's cool. And then as all the Eternals come together, you know, midway through the movie, they go, okay, well, what do you guys believe is happening? And they all get like input from everybody, and then they make a common decision for all of them on how to proceed forward. That might have been interesting too. I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been.
Versus just all showing up in Mesopotamia 5,000 years ago on a flying triangle. Trapezoid? Triangle? It was a triangle, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was an interesting chip, that's for sure. Apparently, yeah. It was easily fixable because it got that.
Was it broken?
Oh, yeah. It got sliced in half.
Oh, yeah, yeah. At the end of the movie, you mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when who you like to refer to as Homelander comes through and just slices the whole thing up. And I kind of like that there's actually a reference to Superman. So in this world, does that mean Superman is a real thing? Or is that just mean the idea of the character of Superman is a real thing? Because, and this is why I know this is really weird to be thinking this deeply about it, but I think you can say, based on the way that this movie was told, that Icarus was always the Superman, and basically because of the influences through time, he became the model for what became the character of Superman.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So like someone ran into Icarus in the past,
mm-hmm.
and because they knew of Icarus, that's what influenced the creation of Superman, the character.
Exactly. Exactly. See what I'm saying? Like that's how Superman can exist in this world and still not be the real Superman. It's a character.
Well, and I'm also trying to remember the whole history behind Shazam, Captain Marvel, Superman, and the whole rights and who owned what, where, when, and how. And it's a very interesting read and probably should be like a documentary movie at some point. I sound like John now, but
a little bit.
I think that there could be a possibility that Superman was Marvel at one point. I'm trying to, I don't remember. So someone will have to correct me on that one. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that he said it in the movie because I was kind of like, is that okay? Like, what?
I don't think it was ever Marvel, but I could be wrong about that too. But I like the idea of thinking that maybe Icarus was the influence for what became the character of Superman. So in Marvel's world, Icarus is real. Superman is just a fictional character that kids look up to, you know?
Yeah,
I think that's kind of a cool way to look at it. So the post-credit stingers, you got Eros, a.k.a. Star Fox. He's played by Harry Styles. His sidekick, Pip the Troll, was played or voiced by Patton Oswalt. And then you got at the very end, you got Dane finding the sword that'll make him Black Knight. And Blade is whispering behind him. So just to give you a little history, Dane Whitman, is the love interest for Cersei in the movie, is destined to become a medieval-inspired superhero known as the Black Knight, which is a role that Kit Harington is going to be playing, which is kind of funny since, you know, Game of Thrones. I think he's got that down. The scene with Whitman is kind of, he's opening this ancient box that holds the weapon the Black Knight is most known for. It's called the Ebony Blade. And he hears that voice coming behind him, like, are you ready for it or whatever he says. And that's Blade, Mahershala Ali. So that is the future vampire hunter for Marvel. That's whispering. Cool twist.
It was so cool.
Now, did you know it was Blade right away? Because I thought it was Nick Fury at first.
At first, I thought it was Nick Fury. And then I thought about it and I was like, no, why would Nick Fury be here? That doesn't make any sense. And then I was like, ooh, no, because he's the Black Knight. The Black Knight and Blade go together. So I was like, oh, it must be Blade in the background. I didn't pick up whose voice it was, that it was Mahershala's. But like, I was like, it had to be Blade if it wasn't Nick Fury.
See, I had to look it up because I thought it was Nick Fury. I'm like, I know Black Knight. I know the character Black Knight and I get that. I had no idea they crossed paths with Blade. So because he pops up in Avengers comics every now and again. So that's,
and I'm trying to remember. Okay. So phase four, we're at Eternals. That means that Spider-Man is the next movie. Then Doctor Strange, then Thor, Love and Thunder, Black Panther 2, then Captain Marvel 2, then Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, then Blade. So we're still 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 movies away.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting that they introduced Blade so early when it's still a ways out yet.
We just better get it. Or maybe Black Knight will be a TV show in the meantime or something. But I think
maybe
Kit Harington is a good fit for that.
Yeah. I mean, he was the Black Knight before.
How did you feel about Harry Styles being... I mean, I get
that part. I don't know.
A lot of people are just losing their shit over it. And I'm like, look, I like the guy's music. I'm not that big of a One Direction fan, I guess. I don't.
But I mean, we already like know him. That Star Lord is a ham. So Star Fox is probably a ham. So if he plays the ham character, I think that maybe that'll work.
He had a great,
because he did seem like the kind of sexy, flashy kind of, you know, I'm here, Harry Styles.
But that's just it. I mean, I saw Harry Styles, so I'm hoping if he gets to do anything more with this, like, he can act the hell out of it. I know he can act. I mean, I've seen him in other things. He can act, so it's not like he's not capable. Yeah,
it's like I said, like, the reason why I didn't like Suicide Squad is because I never saw Deadshot. I saw Will Smith the entire time.
I get that.
Yeah, that could be the same problem here.
Could be. Anything more on Eternals that you want to address or talk about?
I love the music. I thought it was great to have, oh my gosh, draw on a blank. It was good to have Ramin Djawadi come back because he did the first Iron Man. He was the first one in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. Technically, Hulk was the first one. But,
and Westworld and Game of Thrones. And
yeah, but the fact that he did, you know, Iron Man and now he's back again doing Eternals, I thought that was kind of cool. Because the music was great. I love the music. The score was fantastic.
He's an absolutely magnificent composer. Really is. Just does great work all the time. Really gives... character through his music, which is hard to do.
Agree.
Did any of the characters that we did see you felt are strong enough to do their own movie, like solo film, break off into a solo flick, or even a team up with one or two of them?
Yeah, I think Cersei definitely could hold her own.
Sure.
Even Thena could hold her own. I think Thena and Thor together would be kind of fun.
That would be kind of fun. Yeah.
Cersei could do her own thing, but I think Cersei pairs up better if she has someone with her. So like Fastos or Makari or Druig. But like, you could totally do a whole Fastos, Kingo, Druig threesome, like Three Musketeers. I think that'd be fun.
I would like to see Cersei and Kingo because I feel like she can handle the dramatic heft, and he can handle some comedy. He can do the ass kicking, and she's changing everything into sand or flowers or whatever she feels like.
Butterflies,
ice. Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I think that could be a real fun dynamic. And I really kind of like Druig. Even though he is the asshole of the group, I mean, I don't know what it is. I think he's just so smarmy, and I like that.
Yeah.
And also, he's the only one that's just point blank, like, let's just dominate these people. They're idiots. And I kind of respect that.
Sometimes you have to appreciate someone telling you exactly how it is.
Exactly. Okay, well, I think that's going to do it, man. So hopefully we weren't too hard on the movie if you loved it. And if you didn't love it, then you probably understand exactly what we were talking about. So that's going to do it for this episode of The Hollywood Outsider. Thanks for listening. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, probably to see Eternals for the 14th time or something, buy popcorn.
Peace out.